On February 9th of 2004, 21-year-old UMass student Maura Murray drove from her dorm in Amherst, Massachusetts to the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
At approximately 7:27 p.m., Maura spun out her 1996 Saturn on a hairpin turn on Route 112 in North Haverhill. There has never been a credible sighting of Maura since.
Maura is 5'7" tall. She weighs 120 pounds, and she has brown hair and hazel eyes.
If you have any information regarding Maura's disappearance, please submit it to us,
the Murray Family, at MauraMurrayFamilyDirect@gmail.com,
or the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit.
This is Missing Maura Murray.
Welcome back to Missing Maura Murray. I'm Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you today, Tim?
I'm doing all right, Lance. And in this episode, we have author James Renner on.
We have author James Renner, who joined us virtually live on our Get Vocal night. We do Get Vocal every Thursday night, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Sometimes we spill into that 10 o'clock hour Eastern Standard Time. It's their True Crime Thursday. And I like to think we're sort of the headliners of the True Crime Thursday. We have a beautiful, beautiful community of people that join us. So you can check it out on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But as we like to say, the best way to interact is right there on Get Vocal, especially when we have a guest like James Renner, who really doesn't need much of an introduction.
Right. Not to this audience anyway. Of course, he wrote True Crime Addict about his investigation into the disappearance of Maura Murray. And he does the podcast, The Philosophy of Crime. And he joined us to talk about Maura Murray mostly and sort of the new things that have been going on lately in the case. The fake tip that happened a few weeks ago being one thing, and really just kind of a lot of the recent episodes and news going on. I mean, there's a lot of chatter on the Maura Murray case on Twitter, especially on Reddit. So we kind of just sort of follow those topics.
Yeah, we get into Bill Rausch, obviously, because that has been the one of the major topics of conversation. And I want to be clear, we say it 100 times in the episode, I'll say it 100 more times. We're not saying that Bill had anything to do with Maura's disappearance, of course. We're just saying that over the past few years, especially the past few months, and more intensely the past few weeks, things that Bill has done and events leading up to Maura's disappearance in regards to Bill just have these open-ended questions, these unanswered questions, and it's sort of the community that's not going to go away, that's looking into this, that really wants the answer so that they can look elsewhere. And that's kind of what we're getting down to. And sometimes we get caught up a little bit in the details and we start splitting hairs. But again, it is not because we're trying to prove anything towards Bill. It's mostly we're trying to rule out certain things.
That's right. And of course, I want to remind everyone, no harassment. Please be respectful to everyone out there. It is okay to have theories, but please be respectful and send any tips and theories to the appropriate places, wherever they may be.
And for anybody who's interested in James's other works, check out The Man from Primrose Lane and Muse and the work he's done on Amy Mihalovic. He's not just a Maura Murray one-trick pony. He's really dug into a lot of things, both nonfiction and fiction. So just highly recommend his writing.
Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at Maura Murray Doc. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well. Thanks a lot for listening. And we are live. It's Thursday, 9 p.m. It's the Crawl Space Gossip Pod. What's going on? I'm Tim, here tonight with Lance. What's up, Lance?
Tim, if I was any better, I would be you. It's such a good night. Such a good night. The church bells are tolling 9 from the town center. Thursday night. Get vocal.
It's Thursday night. Get vocal. We are on Twitter. We're streaming to Twitter. We're streaming right to Facebook. We're streaming directly to YouTube. And if you're watching this live on September 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern, why don't you click the link that says Get Vocal and sign yourself up to Get Vocal and enter this chat room, because it's a great conversation.
Get your butts in here. Get your butts in here. You know that there was a meteor that flew in between the Earth and the Moon this morning, and that meteor is even streaming Get Vocal. I don't know how they're doing it, but they are watching tonight.
It's James Renner. How's it going tonight?
Hey, guys. What's up?
What is going on? James Renner and his hat. I'm so happy you wore the hat. It's like your signature now. I feel like you're a 50s gumshoe detective. I love it.
Just the facts, Lance. Just the facts.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you know that they never said that in Dragnet? They never said that line. It was a modification of that line. They never said just the facts, ma'am.
Did he say something like, "No, Luke, I am just the facts, man"?
Yes. And then he said, "Have the lamb stop screaming, Clarice." It was a mashup of a lot of different genres that stole from it.
Well, that makes sense. Perfect sense. Yeah.
But that's not really what we're here to talk about tonight, but it is always fun to talk about pop culture and movies and things like that, especially with James Renner. So welcome, James Renner. Welcome, chat room. But we are here to talk about Maura Murray tonight, the disappearance of Maura Murray, February 9th, 2004, in North Haverhill, New Hampshire. She went missing, never to be seen again as of now. How's it going, guys? What are your thoughts?
I mean, how many people are in here, first of all? I feel like there's a lot of people that really that have a lot of questions for you, so I don't know whether we should start with the questions or just get into, I don't know, what have you been up to? You know.
Before I forget about it, I had a thought on the cell phone records that you guys have been going through.
Okay, here we go.
Some people's think that there's some kind of discrepancy with there not being enough time for Bill to make flights up to New Hampshire based on his cell phone records. There's not enough of a gap anywhere for this flight that's over like 3 hours or something. I had a question that I don't know if this is how it works, but so the largest gap is over like 2 hours, like maybe close to 2.5 hours. Where he flies out of is Central or Mountain time, and then he lands in Eastern time. Is it possible that his cell phone records were in Central when he left and then Eastern when he landed, so that a 2.5 hour gap might really be a 3.5 hour gap?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. I don't think so, though, because I think the cell phone records are just Central.
Right. I think we had talked about this before, and yeah. I think that the cell phone records only reflect where the cell phone is rooted, right?
I think so, because on the records it says Central at the top.
Yeah, correct.
I don't know. I don't know enough about cell phones to know, but that might be worth checking into if there's some former Sprint salesman out there that knows that sort of thing. So,
okay. And so what are the outcomes? So just to catch some people up who aren't familiar with what you're talking about, the time that it would have taken to fly, you explain it. So he wouldn't have had time to drive.
Yeah. I haven't honestly been following this in detail, but from what I've seen, as people are going over these cell phone records again, they're finding that maybe Bill didn't have enough time to catch a flight and be on that flight all the way to New Hampshire, because there's not enough. He's on his cell phone all that day, and there's not a long enough break in there that it would account for the flight. But, you know, again, I don't know about cell phones, but if one scenario I had was that his cell phone was registering as Central or Mountain when he was at Fort Sill. And then when he touched down in New Hampshire, it's registering as Eastern, which would look on the cell phone bill as just a 2.5 hour gap, when in reality, it's like 3.5 hours, and would then clear him of, you know, any sort of, you know, tomfoolery with the flights. It would explain it away.
Yeah. And Jillian in the chat room mentions that the scheduled flights are often longer than the actual flight time. So you land and you can turn your phone back on and make the call. So, you know, even though, and wind will vary too. I definitely have experienced pretty strong variance in flights across the country just because of wind. So that's something to note.
You catch a good tailwind, you're there in 15.
And, of course, we had Tara on the show recently. There was 2 episodes in a row that aired last Thursday and then this Monday. And then Ryan Coyalto came on this Thursday today. And I thought that was pretty interesting as well. And so, yeah, a lot of more Murray content lately and a lot of, like, interesting angles I feel like we've never really covered on the show in depth.
Yeah, and I just want to say that the people that we've had on recently with Tara and with Ryan have been very organized and very, and I said it in the intro to the episodes, you can have a dialogue with them. Like, you know, we're having a dialogue with James, and we've had dialogues with James about theories, and we've disagreed. And there were moments during both of those conversations with each person, with Tara and with Ryan, where we would just present something else and say, well, what about this? And the feedback would be, oh, and I didn't look at it like that. Or, okay, well, I'm going to think about that. And it was so nice. It was so refreshing to experience that. So just a big thank you. Where's Robert? Robert, oh, there he is.
What's up, Robert? How you doing?
Hey, Robert.
You guys hear me all right?
I can. Yeah, thank you.
You guys hear me?
For all those videos you've been doing lately. We haven't met, you know, in person, at least not that I recall.
Nope.
So
no.
Looking forward to that, but nice to meet you over Get Vocal.
It's nice to see you too, James. Yeah, no, it's actually funny. The first time I messaged you in all these years of doing this was earlier this summer.
Oh, wow.
It was the first time I reached out to you on Twitter. That was the first time we ever spoke or collaborated or anything. So that's kind of weird in itself. You know, it's been a long time. So it's,
yeah. Thank you.
I think you're doing great things.
Thanks, man.
I don't think you're the you that everybody says you are.
I think it's blown out of proportion. I had this conversation with Jordan this week what's Jordan's spooky
nighttime podcast. Yeah. Yeah. We heard that. That was excellent. It was podcaster therapy.
It's not crawl space, so you don't talk about it here.
But that's the thing. Like, you know, he's like, you know, you're the guy that everybody loves to hate. But honestly, like, everybody I've met in person at like CrimeCon or that has had discussions like this or that I'm on the phone with for any length of time, everybody realizes that everybody else is, you know, they're cool, I'm cool, and then it fizzles down. So you know, it's just a small handful of people, but fewer and fewer, I think. So, but thank you.
Well, I think you know, not everyone's going to agree on everything that everyone else does, or their methods, or the way they do things. You're a journalist. I understand that, and I understand why you do things the way you do. I don't agree with everything that you've written or said, but we all want the same thing, so we're all on the same team. Theoretically, so let's go with that.
Take this.
Well, anytime you're feeling bad about yourself, we're going to get Robert on, and Robert's actually going to be joining us at some point in our Wormtown studio. So I'm going to make sure that I get real low about myself. I'm going to make sure my self-esteem is nil. And then we'll have you, and I'll walk out of that building and I'll be like, I am on top of the world.
Lance, I hope you're at your lowest point. And I'm going to come in and I'm just going to amp you up. But we have to make a video of your demeanor before and then after, so everyone can see.
And then we'll do it.
And we'll do a side by side of the scene from Miracle where he's pumping up the hockey team, and when you're pumping up me, and it'll almost be identical. All right, I'm gonna mute myself.
Well, yeah, definitely check out Robert Lynch's Facebook group, Strength in Numbers. It is very positive, and Robert, your presence is always so welcome and positive, and that goes for Twitter as well.
I'm doing my best, and we got a good group of people, a lot of really positive attitudes, a lot of positive comments. Just trying to stick with the case. It's hard though, because with the trolling and all that, we end up spending so much time talking about that. And we all have limited time to spend on the case. We all have different things in our lives, you know, family, kids, and all that. So it's a little disheartening at times because you spend so much time talking about, well, who's trolling who on Reddit and this and that. I'm just trying to get everybody back to, let's talk about Maura. Let's talk about the case. Let's talk about the facts. Let's go forward with that, because that's what's really helpful. So I get a little discouraged, and I sent you a message, Tim, you know, I think today, that I was just a little bit baffled by everything that's going on. And I posted it on Twitter. Just, it's a little depressing, but I think, you know, we can rise above that. I think there's so many good people in the community, more good people than bad. I think we can rise above that. And that's what we should focus on.
And the really, you know, there's so many people out there that are kind and are decent, that have, you know, followed the case for years and have been, you know, are members of your Facebook page or on Reddit, that never, ever, ever comment, partly because they don't want to put themselves out there, partly because they see what happens when you do. And, you know, those are the people that, you know, sometimes they'll take the time to email you and pick you up.
It's sad how some people are afraid to comment because they're afraid of the backlash. And it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't
really
be like
I
that.
Honestly haven't seen anything like this in any other case. There, you know, there's always a little bit of infighting, but nothing to this extreme where people are creating fake identities, you know, catfishing off people's real names. It's weird.
Well, James, how do you explain the occurrences that go on in The Man from Primrose Lane, the true story that you wrote? This is a true story, right? I mean, this is a crazy story.
You know, if anybody picks it up, you will see that I borrowed heavily from my real life. And there is a very early version of like a troll in that book too. So it's based on actual events, ripped from the headlines.
Ripped from the headlines. I love it.
Yeah.
This has been a pretty crazy era of the trolling in the Maura Murray case. We've literally got people impersonating past trolls from the community. Like, that's how crazy it's gotten.
Just real quick, like what I noticed that it was like beyond, over and above anything that had happened before. So this person that created this fake identity, which was a real person at UMass, that sent me this tip about how he saw Maura with two women, and then he was able to identify one of these women. It was his story. And but his whole thing was he was driving up there and saw her in Woodsville the day of the disappearance, and he was going to his friend's birthday party, and he gave me the name of the friend. And I, you know, just I had a hinky feeling, even though everything was lining up. And I, so I backgrounded his friend too. And his friend had that exact birth date. So not only did he steal the identity of real people at UMass, he hunted around for a while to find a guy that had that birth date so that he could fold it into his story.
Yeah, and we confirmed the dorm that the fake person was claimed that they stayed at, and that was all confirmed. Like, that, you know, this person had definitely gone there, stayed at the dorm from their story. So yeah, we knew it was either a trap or real.
You know, but ultimately pretty harmless as far as exploring it further, you know, like responding and following up on it, because the worst thing that happens is that you find out that it's somebody that trolled you, and you know you wasted a little bit of time on it, but that's what you have to do anyway, because you can't not follow up on something like that. Even if you have that like gut feeling like there's something off here, why is this person coming forward now and not years ago? Yeah, and when we were all talking about this, it was like, I think we all kind of said like, probably not. It just feels weird. But I mean, what are you supposed to do? You have to follow up on it. So I guess like as far as, I don't think it's as harmful as maybe people perceive it, because we're talking about it. People think it's disgusting. People think that it's so elaborate that, you know, that this happened, but at least it's not going unnoticed. And I think that would be more harmful if it went unnoticed and people realized that they could get away with it.
Right. And I think that's the greater point here. And that's, I think, why it was okay to publicize at that point, where it's like, okay, well, this happened. You know, it's either real or it's not. And either way, it's going to the police and they're going to try to figure it out, I would hope. So,
yeah, I mean, these are the new rules that we're playing by now. We kind of made them up on our own because we followed other rules in the past, but if you're going to try to pull this off, these things are going to be talked about and they're going to go to the police. And that's, there's no time to waste on something like that. We'll follow up on it. If it's bullshit, goes to the cops. If it's not, it goes to the cops and we talk about it. So that's, that's, you know, that's just the reality of today. That's the reality of what we have to do now.
Yeah. It kind of seems like there was another one that just got sent in. I don't want to give too many details about that, but it seems like that might've happened in the past 24 hours as well. But it hasn't really.
Well, I ran a check on that. That was actually Bill Thomas. I'm just kidding.
Bill Thomas from the chat room. Yeah, right.
Okay. There were a couple of questions. I got to scroll up here. There are a couple of questions from Ryan and who else? Angela, I think.
Yeah.
Ryan said, is Bill's flight on February 11th supposed to have been between 7:01 and 9:46 a.m.?
If I recall correctly, based on memory, that would be the first leg, I think, of the flight, or one of the legs. But And I don't, and as Tara is pointing out in the chat room, we don't really know. He's never exactly said it, so we just think that that's probably the case.
And, okay. You know, there's been a lot of discussion, you know, in the last week or two about, you know, and to some extent, you know, I think if you go back and look at how the story has evolved in the last couple of weeks, you'll see that Bill kind of got this thing going. So there's been all this discussion about his actions leading up to getting to New Hampshire. I'm less interested in the time before he gets to New Hampshire. I'm more interested in the timeline after he's in New Hampshire. And hopefully people take a look at that too.
Yeah. So I know there's been a lot of talk on Twitter about Bill's, I think it's a DA-31 form. And so Bill, appeared to be going through the steps to try to track that down so we could have the information of when his flights were, because as you're saying, like, you know, the community wants to know, when he got there, and, you know, and I think we should be grateful at least that he is here to be able to ask those questions to him. You know what I mean? I know we haven't gotten the answers yet, but at least he's here that we can maybe get those answers.
And he did look into that form and wasn't able to find it in the particular set of files that he requested. But you're right. And again, this is not any of us trying to say that Bill is a kidnapper, a murderer. We're not saying he had anything to do with that. This is just an enormous community effort to try to figure this out. And he's a central character. Character's a bad word. He's a central figure in her disappearance. And the circumstances of him, I don't know, I wasn't in the military, but the circumstances of him being approved to leave the military for someone that he wasn't related to, wasn't married to, wasn't even engaged to, and wasn't technically missing at the time, I mean, I just think that he did an excellent job convincing his superiors to allow him that leave. I don't know. I mean, I wish someone could clarify that for me too. Like, how much effort does it take? Because we heard that it takes a lot of effort to be granted leave.
I think a lot of these questions would have been cleared up if his alibis had talked to anybody. You know, when I first reached out to him and was reporting on this way back in like 2014, 2015, yeah, I asked him some of these questions, and he gave me the names of two people that were stationed with him at Fort Sill in the Army that he said could back up his alibi. Neither one of them ever answered an email or a phone call. To this day, have not granted interviews. And you know, the truth is, and again, I'm not as interested in what happened at Fort Sill as what happened in New Hampshire. But the truth is, nothing's been verified publicly about this guy's alibi ever.
So you're not interested so much in what happened at Fort Sill. You're more interested in a timeline in New Hampshire.
Correct. Yeah.
But you would be interested in something that would happen at Fort Sill that would I guess be beneficial to him in a way where he could take his leave so abruptly.
There's still a lot of questions about how he got off base so quickly. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's even to this, there's no evidence of a crime, let alone 24 hours after it happened, to a person you're not even engaged to. So yeah, that part, the only thing that would have been interesting to me about the DA-31 is exactly when and how it was approved. Not that it was approved, because we know he got there, but the when and how of it.
What was the date?
Right.
You know, what was the date? From my research, I've talked to some family members and friends that have been in the military, and they said it's really hard to get off base unless, like, you know, like my mom died or my wife died or my sister died or something like that. You kind of have to jump through hoops. My quasi fiance is supposedly missing. That's in the gray area. So how he was able to leave, I've always wondered that myself. Like, it seemed to generate so easy, regardless of what he says. But there's nothing that backs it up. There's no paperwork. There's no forms. There's nothing like that. So we just have to take his word, and I don't take his word. So
it's very interesting because you're talking about the military in 2004, February 2004. The Iraq War started at the end of March of 2003. So the Iraq War wasn't even a year old at the time. It was going pretty strong at that time. Again, maybe I don't know. I've never been in the military. Maybe it isn't as hard to be granted emergency leave during the time during wartime too.
But what about Julie? And I'm not clear on the details of how Julie's leave went down. I've never asked her that, never thought to. But I guess in comparison, isn't that interesting? Or at least, I mean, that's something we should explore a little bit, right? Because she wasn't there right away. So did it take her extra time to get leave? And then why would it have taken her extra time if it's her sister and Bill not?
Exactly. It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that one, so we'll put a pin in that for now.
Yeah, we'll put a pin in that. Again, I always wrestle with, like, do we even deserve the answers? But I think we do, right? Because there's so many people that invested so much of their lives into this. You know, do we deserve the answer? Do we deserve Bill just saying, like, okay, I'll hop on, get vocal, give me a list of the questions, I'll answer them. I will put the community's mind to ease, even though I don't have to. You know, what's the pros and cons there?
I'm also interested in, you know, I guess there's been some inconsistencies about when or if Mora ever told him about the accident in Hadley, right? Like there's some statements where she called him that morning from Fred's phone and told him about it there. But then there's also some statements where that didn't happen. You guys know do you guys know the truth of which statement's correct?
Well, that's what he said on Reddit and social media recently, that obviously they talked about the accident. But when we spoke to him, and this is going back a couple of years, he said that she didn't mention the accident. We were like, really? She didn't mention the accident? He was like, no, I don't think I found out about that until I was in New Hampshire. So, I mean, again, with what we said in the episode, I don't know if that's a memory thing or what that is. But that's, I don't know. It's weird. I've never been through something like that. I can't say. I mean, and obviously, and my experience would be different from someone else's anyway. So it's probably not valid. So I don't know. I don't know him that well. I don't know if he has a bad memory or what his story is. We know he's been somewhat deceptive or inconsistent on things at one point or at certain points. So that's a direction. Or he's got the worst memory ever, as Brett says.
Do we know if the Murrays ever heard the phone call that Maura supposedly, this voicemail that she supposedly left on his?
Yeah, so actually there was a tweet from John Smith today, and I might have to, it might take me a minute to dig it up, but he did apparently ask Fred about that, so give me a minute to dig that up.
Okay.
Cool.
Tim, you had said that you don't know, I'll let you dig that up, but this is my point is that you said you don't know what you would do in a situation like that. I don't know what I would do in a situation like that, but I do remember, for the most part, the context of every call that came into me at 3:30 in the morning. That was an emergency. I can think of right now off the top of my head at least 5 phone calls that were emergencies that came into me, and I remember not word for word, but I remember the details of them. And if I were to be questioned about it, I'd say, yeah, that's what this person said. I mean, she got into an accident. She called him from her dad's phone. She had a hell of a night, and she never mentioned it.
Right. What was weird about that was, you know, and really when we heard it too, it was like he was like, oh, I was calming her down, but she didn't mention the accident. Well, what are you calming her down from then? That doesn't really make any sense. So here's the tweet from John Smith. He said, I just spoke to Fred 3 days ago about the voicemail, and he said it was absolutely unintelligible. It was static and unable to determine if it was even a person on the other end of the line. It was useless as far as he was concerned. And that's the Red Cross call that is known as the Red Cross call, whatever, came into to Bill's phone some point on the 10th of February.
And compare that to what Bill's mom said about the call, that it was what was the word she used? It was it like haunted him.
Chilling, I think.
Chilling. It was like heart-wrenching. And she said it haunted him. And he said he was absolutely convinced it was her.
One other question about that call. So as we're to understand it now, I know that it's still a little wonky, but the idea is that that call came in while he was going through, while he was transferring flights or switching over to flights.
It's also a bit unclear. I know he said
through security.
Yeah. There's been a couple of different reports, but I think it was at some point through security, but then it was like, oh, it was in Dallas or was it Oklahoma City? And obviously I don't know that you'd go through security a second time if your layover was in Dallas, you know?
Okay. So, Tim, if you're in that situation, let's say it happened say he's switching flights on his way to New Hampshire to look for Maura, or, you know, put yourself in that situation. You're transferring flights to track down your girlfriend. You get a message that sounds like her in the cold whimpering for help. What's the next thing you do?
Call the police.
Maybe call her.
Yeah.
He didn't call her.
Yeah, so I mean, it might have played a trick on him, I guess, in some way. But that's a great point. He didn't call, and it really kind of never made sense to me anyway. That why she would use a calling card to call him. I don't. If it's some panicked call that you're leaving a whimpering voicemail, like I don't think you're gonna dial the 15 extra numbers from the calling card. And at that point, you're on a landline anyway, so you're not, you know what I mean. So you're dialing the number. You're pressing the numbers.
That's a really interesting point, James. When was the next call to Mora from him?
I don't have the records.
Oh, well, I happen to have the records. I'm about to open them up.
Moonsock.
Right, let's check it out.
You earned the hat tonight with that that observation, James.
Well, I wish I could take credit for it, but I've been reading the comments over here, and they've been discussing it over there. And it's a really good point. I don't know who had it first.
Oh, Tara wants to pop on. Is that okay, Rob, that Tara pops on?
Absolutely. I'll free up my space with Tara. Okay. I'll see you guys later. Okay, cool. James, absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's hit the Union Oyster House next time I'm in town.
I swear to God, if you go to the Union Oyster House without me, if you and Robert go there and don't call me, their chowder is insane.
Hey.
It's Tara. What's going on?
How's it going, guys?
Great.
Well, well done on the recent episodes on Missing Maura Murray.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think you got a great reaction from the community. I think these are, and again, I think we touched on it, these are questions that we kind of always wondered, never really asked, you know, never really verbalized, but you really voiced a lot of important points.
Thanks. Okay, so back to James's question there. What were you just asking? I kind of got cut out there, but you were asking about the call and going through the airport, right? Right. And why isn't it clear what time his flight was?
I think there's a lot of unanswered questions about like where, what flight he took and where and when. And he even replied, he said something to me, I think it was over Twitter or Reddit, that was kind of like one of his famous, comments that is also a dig at the same time. He's like, well, you know, 'cause I pointed out, I'm like, I have emails of every flight, confirmation emails of every flight I've taken since 1998, because they always go through your email. So, you know, can you pull those out and make it helpful for everybody? And he's like, well, you know, for somebody that flies a lot, you know, we don't tend to keep those, you know? So, apparently I'm not the jet setter that Bill Rausch is, but it's weird to me that he didn't keep, you know, that he doesn't have some sort of record of that.
Yeah.
Not saying that there's anything there, but you know.
Sorry, real quick. Can you tell me about what time that incoming Red Cross call was? Because I'm going to look at the records. Do you...
We're not sure. I think we're thinking it was the morning, sometime around 7 a.m. on the 10th, right? Or the 11th.
I don't have my notes in front of me. I could grab them, but there was one at 5 something in the morning, right?
Right. I'm looking now. 5:05. There is an incoming call. 5:05 a.m. on 2/11. And actually,
but
yeah,
that one is easily identified as a Red Cross call. So the one in question, it was an incoming call. So if the Red Cross called him, and it would only show up as incoming. So when he made that call at 5 in the morning, that was an outgoing call. So would that not indicate that he had already received the incoming call?
Call number 450 on 211 at 5:05 a.m. is incoming, but it lasts for 8 minutes, which doesn't line up with the voicemail. Same day, call 480 at 6:49 a.m. incoming. That lasts for 4 minutes. Probably doesn't line up with that either.
But then he calls the Haverhill PD after that one.
He does. That's a great point. Okay, so that might be that. Might
then he
be
checks
it.
His voicemail again. Mm-hmm. Then there's another incoming call. Then he checks his voicemail. Then there's an incoming call. Then he calls home. Then voicemail.
Oh, and that second incoming call, that 947 one, says CW. And Tara, you astutely noted that means call waiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? He was on the phone when that call came in?
It looks like he was checking his voicemail when that one came in.
Yeah, because Swan on Twitter today had posted an old, I'm not sure what forum it was from, but it was apparently Helena trying to explain what time the call came through and the whole specifics of that. But, and she had said it was her understanding that Bill was on the phone when the Red Cross call came in. But I said, no, because there was no call waiting indicator on the records to support that. So that's out.
Now, what about the attempt that happened recently that by Bill to get the DA-31 form, and then there's a member of the community, Dave, who apparently made a call to Bill's commanding officer. I don't know too much about this. I only looked at it a little bit, but how are you guys feeling about this this moment?
It looks like Tara wants to answer that one.
No, my head's shaking. No.
You know, I think it's great that people are showing an interest and want to clarify these stories, but it's not. And again, I don't think there's some conspiracy about getting leave from Fort Sill. In fact, I think it was designed from Bill to just kind of embarrass John Smith and other people. The CO thing, it's not been verified. And if you're going to report on something like that, you have to, you know, let's have a quote in this guy's name or an audio recording of it. If what you're doing is calling up a source and getting information and then just telling us what that information is, that is totally, and that's totally, you know, unsubstantiated. I'm not saying he didn't really talk to the guy. In fact, I think he did. But if you're going to bring out something that is that important, the source needs to be on the record.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Or if not on the record, you know, give us the audio, which is what I did with Bill's victims in D.C. You know, obviously they didn't want to use their names. So we voices instead. And, you know, people, if you want to jump down the rabbit hole and conspiracy theories and ignore the indictment, you can say that those women were just paid actors, I guess. But at least it's a little bit more than me just telling you something.
I think that might be a little bit of the elephant in the room, right? That we're talking about somebody who does have these indictments.
Yeah. You know, and he was first indicted in like April of 2019, and escorted off the flight as soon as he gets back from serving the country in East Africa. Unfortunately, because of COVID, one of the many things that have changed because of this pandemic is this trial keeps getting delayed. It was originally scheduled for May 2020. And has now moved to March 2021. But at the same time, the prosecutor, and it's the United States Attorney's Office because it's DC, so it's a federal prosecutor. They're not dropping the case either. You know, they could easily have, instead of putting it to March, just saying, okay, you know, we're not going to pursue this anymore. They offered. At the very beginning, they offered Bill a plea deal, which would have been him pleading to a misdemeanor instead of this felony. You know, essentially, he'd probably just have probation on that, I would think. And he did turn down that deal. And it was after that that we discovered that his mistress had taken out a protection order against him. And there was that whole, and the judge found him guilty of stalking. But I think after that, I don't know if they've taken away the deal or what, or if the deal's still on the table. I don't know.
Well, it is interesting to talk about somebody in these terms. You know, we keep prefacing it with saying that we're not saying that he did anything, you know, we're not saying I can't even say, like, listen, I'm not saying he's a bad guy, because I've read the court documents. I've read this stuff. I would never read that and walk away from it and say, oh, that's not a bad guy. I mean, that's a bad guy. I just don't know if that bad guy had something to do with this bad, this bad moment for Mora.
I'm gonna actually come to Bill's defense at least a little bit here.
We'll boot you.
I don't think Bill's a bad guy. I don't think he's a bad. I think he's got a good heart, but I think he's done some terrible things to women that he has not responsibility for. And whatever the causes were, you know, whether it was trauma in childhood or you know, whatever it is, it's got to be deeply personal and not our business. But I think there's a good heart deep down there. So I wouldn't say a bad guy, but a very complicated person who has done some bad things.
I'm gonna say that didn't go over very well in the chat area.
Oh, no. that didn't go over very well.
But hey, this is what we're here for. You know, we're here to hash things out like this. Ryan used a quote of yours. Mora was at her best when she was with Bill. So that was in True Crime Addict.
That was before I spoke to six women that were harassed or assaulted by him.
Six women.
Yeah.
It's somewhere around there, five or six.
Okay.
And people will say, you know, maybe it was the what happened to Mora, you know, that changed him. But I have talked to girlfriends of his before Mora that, you know, the rumors were always there.
And don't they always say like past behavior is a good indicator of future behavior?
Yeah, past is prologue, you know? So, yeah. And I told, you know, I'm not going to get too down on the guy. You know, we'll see what comes out. You know, the frustrating part to me is this woman who was strong enough to stand up and press charges. You know, she did that, I think, in December of 2016. You know, and now here we are, and she's not going to go to trial until 2021. That's not justice. That's what, I don't know what that is.
But I just want to point something out here that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you had reported that Bill had abused a woman, and this is an allegation, had alleged that he abused a woman and called her Mora at Fort Sill, after Mora went missing, right?
Yes. 6 months after Mora went missing.
Okay. So, and that was before, Bill's latest, survivor, in which they went to court in November, in which he called her Mora as well.
Yes.
So in the interim there, people were trying to say you were lying about that.
Yeah. That this indictment, that this woman couldn't have possibly said this, that her story was that they hooked up, and she told me that, you know, he was working at Fort Sill, and she believes in having her husband transferred overseas into a war zone, making her alone. And then he started hitting on her. They hooked up one night. He grabbed her by the neck and said, what he said at that time was, I'm going to kill you just like I killed Mora. And this is according to her. That's her statement. And then, you know, years later, you know, just last fall, we have this woman who says, he liked to choke her like he choked that woman at Fort Sill back in 2004, and called her Mora. You know, he wanted her to play act as Mora.
Sounds like someone with a good heart.
You know, I'm going to be forever the optimist.
I know.
I think there's still good in people, and he's very charming. You know, he's done some good things with these nonprofits in the past. There's just a part of him that he never learned how to control.
Very interesting. I wonder if he's ever had a psychiatric evaluation. I mean, we'll never see it, and he'll probably never tell us. But I think you have to go through one, right? When you enter the military, you must.
I'm sure. You know, and I don't want to get into you know, any sort of psychological, you know, the discussion or, you know, because people have it. I have, I've been in therapy since 2004 myself. And get through the day to day by, antidepressants and pot. So I'm not, I'm not gonna shame anybody's mental, proclivities or how they get by.
No, definitely. And we don't want to shame him, but he's experienced some incredible trauma with his girlfriend going missing. And, and we talked about this recently, Lance, about someone else. Like, you know, you can push it down, but I think that's something you kind of need to explore. And we do know that he was sentenced to some anger management classes, so maybe he is evaluating that now.
24, 25,
I think.
When I lost my, in Ohio, if you get so many speeding tickets within like 12 months, you have to take a remedial driving class. And it, like, in order to get your license back in the state of Ohio, it's 6 hours of intensive, management classes. I can't imagine sitting in a state run, mandatory management class for 22 hours. That's rough.
Well, hey. Oh, hey.
It's is that me?
Hey, we're not the same people.
It's like I'm looking in a mirror.
Yeah, I know. We're
so meta. So glad this is happening.
Nice hat.
Well, I had to put it on for the occasion.
Is it a 5-gallon?
I have no idea. I'm not really a hat connoisseur. I think it's straw.
Do you live in Texas? You got to live in Texas. Do you live in Texas?
Oh, real quick, Richard Ryder here in the chat room mentions, was there anything about the obvious, very obvious social media manipulation recently? And Jamie, I know you've been a part of those conversations, so I don't know if you want to talk about, what Richard Ryder means or what you may take that comment to mean.
I mean, it's been like wild. I've had several people like reach out to me, like trying to, ask if, this Twitter account is copacetic, different stuff like that. And I'm all, and I try to be honest with them and fair. I'm not looking to throw somebody under the bus. But I'm like, there's been a few that I'm like, I don't really know. And I mean, we've all talked about it. I don't understand why this, it just seems to be flocking towards this whole, this case. It's crazy. Yeah. Richard. We've spoken and I've tried to help him get up to speed on a bunch of stuff. And, I think he's been he asked some really good questions and, I don't know, seems like really fair to me. And, we need more people to join in and be, new members doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think the Twitter thread that's been going since July is, I think it's approaching a Guinness Book of World Records.
I think it's surpassed it.
We should look into that because we might actually have a submission.
How great would that be if Guinness had to recognize that? And then print it out in one of those little paperbacks you put in the bathroom and you're flipping through. Yeah. Totally ridiculous.
And also the amount of the different people that were on the thread and off the thread and on the thread.
Did Tom Arnold ever weigh in?
Tom Arnold has been suspiciously quiet about the whole thing.
A big fan until then.
Tom Arnold, great, great actor, great career.
Great character actor.
No, he's.
I don't think he knew what he was getting into and was a little bit misinformed on some of the facts.
When you wake up in the morning and you open up Twitter and Tom Arnold's raging on you, you're in an interesting day.
Yeah.
And you're not Roseanne.
No.
Yeah.
I want to point out, I think Bill was actually in this room. I don't, if he's here, I mean, this could be a good opportunity to actually ask him some of the questions, but I don't see him anymore.
He has my number.
Yeah. And real quick on the I guess social media harassment, trolling, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, we do not condone harassment. We want to invite everybody to understand that, and please take part in no name calling, and please be polite and respectful to people out there. That is really paramount. You can ask questions, but you know, please be polite. And also, I wanted to mention that Folk from Twitter, who's a part of those threads, he was banned from Get Vocal, the site. The actual site, by them, not from us. And so I just want to mention that because as you mentioned, Jamie, some people aren't sure who to trust. I'm not saying what to do with that information. I'm just saying that's what happened. They called them disruptive. That was their quote.
Right. They called them disruptive after looking at, briefly looking at what he, I mean, there was enough stuff for them to see in a short period of time is what I'm saying, for them to determine that anything that he was going to contribute was not going to be productive and he would be a disruptive figure. This was actually something that they looked into after, was it 2 weeks ago when we weren't able to come on, 2 or 3 weeks ago when we had Shayna Roth, we had that scheduled, and then it like our computers weren't working, everything was just shutting down, it was a mess, and so we just brought that to their attention, and then they, you know, we were like, might want to look into these people who we saw in the chat room, and that's the reality that we're in now, is that they'll look in, you know, people will look into it, and then people will make sure that you are not disruptive anymore.
Yeah. There's no place for that.
No. All right, guys. I'm going to go watch Joe versus the Volcano now. But it was fun. It was fun hanging out with everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us, James. And thank you. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, Robert Lynch. And everyone in the chat room for joining. This was a great night. Thank you so much, everyone.